Welcome to the Scholarship Chat Podcast. I am your host, Ashley Hill. Here we talk about the scholarship tips, tools, and strategies that you need to fund your dream career. Let's get started.
Okay, let me get started. So I want to welcome you guys today to another edition of the Scholarship Chat. I'm so excited. We have another amazing expert here with us, and that is Juan Garcia. But I'm going to let him introduce himself. And so, Juan, go ahead and introduce yourself and just tell us your journey to getting your doctorate degree.
Hey, Ashley. Thanks for having me. Like you said, my name is Juan Garcia, and I'm the founder and CEO of the Doctoral Support Team, which is an academic and dissertation coaching service designed to help doctoral students earn their degrees. I launched the Doctoral Support Team after getting my own doctorate in education from USC a few years ago, and just after seeing the variety of student needs that didn't always match up with the different kinds of support that were available either from the university or their advisors. For me, getting a doctorate was the end of a long and fun academic journey. I spent time as a public high school teacher, as a director and administrator in for-profit education. So over the last 20 years, I've been in both public and private sector, knocked out 2 master's degrees because I'm a glutton for punishment, and it just made sense for me to kind of, you know, carry it all the way to the end of the road. And so that's where I am now.
Awesome. And I want, could you tell us, for those that are maybe thinking about getting a doctorate in education, what was your research focus?
So my dissertation ended up being a study examining the collision between 2 different phenomena is the way I describe it. Because as I started my program, I had twin kids. I had a boy and a girl. And at the time that I started the program, they were about 3 years old, which actually for me weighed a lot into when and how I started my program, because I wanted to finish my program, finish my degree before I knew I would go, you know, headfirst into dad mode. I wanted to be able to be there for homework and the after school sports and all of that without, you know, sacrificing that for school time for me. So when I got to that point where they were about 2 or 3, I started looking into it and I'm like, okay, it's either going to be now or it's going to be when they're like in high school. And so I pulled the trigger, and for me, that was big, because the struggles of being a dad and being an engaged dad and full-time working dad, and I split, you know, as much of the home stuff and the nurturing stuff with my wife as I can, that's a lot of stress that a lot of people don't think about for today's working dads. And what it means to be a working dad today is so different from what it was, you know, 20, 30, 40 years ago. So my dissertation ended up examining the different aspects of what are the challenges that get in the way of a working dad earning his doctorate. Because getting a doctorate is already hard enough. I'm sure you know the stat. I'm sure plenty of people know the stat. 50% of people who start a doctorate won't finish it. So that's already an at-risk population by default. Just getting in the door creates an at-risk situation. But then you add the external stresses of being, you know, in a relationship or employed full-time or having kids or being an engaged dad that has all of that wrapped together. So for me, that was really important. It hit home. And when I looked around the people in my program, I wasn't the only one. And so I saw it as a gap in the research, and that's what I went after, seeing what were the important things that we need to pay attention to, and what are some of the different things that, you know, the different steps that can be taken to help working dads get across that finish line.
Right. And you know what? I really like that because now, you know, like you said with your company, now when doctoral students come to you or those that are incoming, and they're in that situation, you can actually give them some real-world advice from your own experiences. So I think that's pretty cool.
Thank you.
And I'm sure much needed, too, because you've already been where they're headed, I guess, what they're dealing with.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the thing, because most of the time, generally speaking, you look around a doctoral program, and, yeah, there's a lot of people in their late 20s, but by and large, people who go into a doctoral program tend to be either hitting their 30s or they've started the family, they've started the professional career, and they're coming back to school to finish it. So it's not uncommon for them to be working full-time. It's not uncommon for them to have relationships to maintain, community engagement that they're, you know, they're rooted in, or to have kids, or all of them. So you know, just being aware of the demand that's going to be put on you and how it's going to affect those parts of your life is so important as you start the process.
Absolutely. And so kind of shifting out, so kind of at the beginning of the process, so during the application process, when somebody is applying for a doctoral program, what are, in your opinion, what are three mistakes that you see doctoral students making?
You know, it's going to sound really big and vague, but
mm-hmm.
I'm going to say the first thing that, the first mistake a lot of people make is they don't do all their homework. And that blows my mind, because if you got this far, you're probably a little bit like me. You're a little bit of a type A. You're a little bit of a list maker. You're a little bit of a let me try to look at everything on the board and make sure I know which, you know, what are all the different plays I can make.
Mm-hmm.
But when it comes to this, you know, when it comes to choosing a doctoral program, which is not quite the same as choosing a master's program or choosing undergrad, it's really not, because the engagement with community is different. The resources available are different, and how it's going to affect your life are different. And so a lot of times when I'm talking to clients and working with people, I start asking things like, well, you know, what percentage of their classes are hybrid or online, since you're talking a long commute for you? And they're like, well, gee, I don't know. And it's like, okay, well, you know, you're worried about finances and stuff. What kind of programs and support do they have? It's like, well, I don't know. It's like, okay, so you're looking long-term. You want to do research in this, and this subject. So do they have anyone who specialized in that? And it's like, well, I don't know the faculty. I don't know, you know, what this leads to. It's like, okay, so why are you applying? What are you doing?
Right.
And so a lot of people buy into the hype of a name, of a school.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people buy into just thinking the marketability. Like, you know, if I get, you know, a business degree from so-and-so school, then the network. And don't get me wrong, the network is important, but the potential of a great network isn't going to get you through the low times of a doctorate. It just won't.
Mm-hmm.
So first and foremost, I think people just have to do their homework to know exactly, as best as they can, what are you getting into?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they make that same mistake, because if I'm going to say a second mistake is they don't do the homework then when it comes to applying to schools. I've had people who are like, you know, oh, I'm going to apply and the deadline's in 2 months. I'm like, okay, so what do you need? Do you need like to GRE again, because it's been a few years? Do you need to get some letters of rec? Do you got to come up
mm-hmm.
with a research proposal? What do you got to do? And they're so like over the moon excited about
mm-hmm.
going to apply that they haven't actually looked at what the requirements are or thought about how long it'll take to meet those requirements.
Mm.
So, you know, that's like the first test run. If you need to take your GRE or some other test again because your scores, you know, are so old or whatever the case is, but you haven't even looked at when that test is available or where it's available or how far out you got to sign up, it's a bad sign. So, again, just kind of looking into it and diving deep, even just for the application process.
I like that. And, you know, I'm so glad you touched on that, is you have to do your homework, and, you know, rightfully so, you're going to get more education, of course, through the doctoral program, but it's knowing these things up front, that way you can make a plan, you know, like you said, of what you need to do and when you need to do.
Yes, absolutely. Because,
mm-hmm.
and 'cause honestly, I mean, this is going to be so different from anything you've done. I mean, I know plenty of people who muscled their way through a master's degree. I know plenty of people who, I think we all know people who stumbled through their undergrad, but like,
oh yeah,
but your doctorate is different. I mean, again, we go back to that very difficult stat. Half of the people who start won't finish. And it's not a coincidence that that one of the largest windows of time where people wash out is after the
mm-hmm.
first year. After the first year, the emotional high is gone. The shiny nickel is gone. Like, you're in coursework. You're deep. At this point, you're like, oh, what did I sign up for? And a lot of people drop after the first year being like, never mind.
Wow.
Yeah.
That honeymoon phase is over.
That's about it. That's about it. So, I mean, like you're saying, planning and just gathering that intel on the front end is so big, which is why I always tell people, you know what, don't make that other mistake of not reaching out for help or not talking to people. I mean, look, if you're applying for grad school, well, first off, you got through a master's. So you
right.
already know some people who have gone through the process. Don't be afraid to ask questions. Don't be afraid to ask about programs or just the process, anything. You know people who have gone through it or who are maybe going through it now. You know, have no shame. Just be like, you know what, I'm thinking about it. I don't know if it's a good fit. What do you think? And just gather intel as best you can, because like you said, it's planning. That's a huge piece of it that I think a lot of people look past at the beginning.
And that's, you know what, that's really good. And so another part, and I know this may not be for, of course, every program, but for those doctoral students that they've been told you're going to go through an interview process, how can they get ready for that?
You know, it's on that same wavelength, because if you did your homework, you have an idea of how the program gears itself, right? Whether it's research-based, mm-hmm. whether they want to see people taking their curriculum out and using it real world, you know, practically, you should be able to get a gist for the personality of the program. You should know whether they're going to expect you to have potential proposal ideas on day one so that they can link you up with a current professor, you know, and make you a research assistant. Mm-hmm. You should have an idea of that. And if you do, that helps with the interview process. That lets you know what the end goal is. But, you know, the other thing is, too, and I tell lots of people who are thinking about this, reach mm-hmm. out to the admissions office. Reach out to an alum network. Lots of schools have an ambassador and mentor program that you can work with, and they can give you an idea, too, of what's it like. Because, honestly, it's kind of like a job interview, and I say that only because most people will go in with their mm-hmm. nerves taking over the process, and you don't want to do that, because if that's what's happening, that means you're not putting your best foot forward. So ease the nerves by telling yourself, okay, I know what's coming up. You know, he told me it's going to include XYZ. She told me it's going to include ABC, so I'm ready for that. And when it pops up, you're good to go.
And that's good. I like that. That's a really good tip, is to get in contact with the college itself, and especially an alumni, because they went through that, I don't want to say exact, but, you know, they went through the interview process, so they can kind of share some things, like you said, mm-hmm. to help those future doctoral students to get ready. So that's good. That's a really good tip. So now let's say that they've gone through the process, right? They've applied. They did well in their interview, so now they're in their program. And I know you mentioned just a minute ago that first year is kind of, you know, when that honeymoon phase is over. But what
yeah.
should they expect in the first week? Like the first week of school, what kind of things can they expect in their program?
You know, honestly, every program is so different. I mean, talking about the different disciplines and the different approaches of schools, but there does seem to be at least one thing that's pretty consistent in the first few weeks of any program, and
mm-hmm.
that's just the fact that you're going through a mix of emotions. I mean, mm-hmm. you're excited, you're nervous, you're overwhelmed, you got this new student orientation thing coming on, you're trying to probably buy a bunch of swag with your new school logo on it. Like,
yeah.
there's just a flood of things going on. And so the one thing that I will say you should expect and be ready for is a flood of information that you don't think matters, but really does. Because this is the time, especially when you talk like student orientation and stuff like that, that's official, but even the unofficial stuff, all the attachments that you'll get in emails and things like that, the handbooks, the memos, the slideshows, hold on to that. Because you're going to get inundated with that stuff, you know, in the first few weeks. And it's all going to serve a purpose at some point. And right now, you're so distracted, you're so amazed with just the beginning of the experience, the emotional piece, that it's real easy to let all that stuff go by and think it doesn't matter. Like, oh, it's another handbook. Oh, it's a one-page memo with, you know, three paragraphs. Big deal. But I would recommend, and I do recommend to everyone, file that stuff into a folder on your desktop and just let it sit so you have it. Because you'll be surprised 2, 3, 4 years from now, when you reach a milestone in the program or you get to the end of the program and you got to, you know, check a certain box in the process, and you get surprised by the exact same information that they told you on day one. So So just be ready for that flood of info and know that it's important. Don't discount anything, because it serves a purpose. Otherwise, why would they be giving it to you?
Exactly. That's really good. And I'm just thinking back to just even undergrad and when I did grad school too, you know, like you said, we would get these tons of things and like you said, emails and all these different things. And you're right. I'm just thinking back while you were talking, as I would have to go back into that folder I kept one to and like, oh, that's where that is. Or, oh, that's why they sent that.
Yep, exactly. Yeah. And that's such a tricky thing because, like I said, you're excited. You're like, oh, it's from so-and-so office. Oh, and it's from so-and-so people. Do I need this? I don't think so. And a bunch of people just delete and go. But like I said, down the road, you're going to be like, they never told me. And they're going to be like, we have the email. Yeah, we did.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But the date and time.
Exactly.
So within that first, I would say, you know, those first few weeks, Is there anything that you would suggest for doctoral students to purchase that would help them, you know, be more successful in that program?
Ooh. You know, purchasing stuff to get yourself on good footing or to feel like you're on better footing is always hard because, I mean, clearly we all get into our programs with different degrees, different shades of financial, you know, support and strength. Some people are working full-time, some part-time, some are working at the university. But if you do have some purchase power, I mean, I think first and foremost, you're going to have to invest in your tech. And I'm going to pull out two things in that sentence real quick. You do need to see it as an investment. You know, I remember getting a new laptop when I started my doctorate. And it's not that my old laptop wasn't cutting it, but I was really scared that, you know, a year from then, 2 years from then, when I was in the middle of my program, that it would die. And, you know, when your laptop goes down, you don't know what's salvageable and what's not. So making sure that you've got good tech on day one, whether that means your laptop, your printer, your Wi-Fi connection. Some people live and die by their external hard drives. I mean, whatever you're going to need to get through, I'd say invest in that from the get-go so that you're ready and set on day one. If there's a second recommendation I can make, and again, one of those weird answers, but however you can, buy time. You know, you're about to have a whole lot of stuff put on your plate, and you don't know how heavy it is. And the weight it puts on you isn't even going to be the same weight that it puts on everyone else because we're all different people. So when I say buy time, like for me, my example is I love working in my yard. I love my front yard. I love my backyard. It's an hour or two each week, you know, outside time. For me, I just love yard work. But you know what? When I was in my program, I needed every hour I could get. And so for those few years, I stepped back and I paid for a gardener to show up, you know, every other week or so to take care of it. And it kind of hurt and kind of made me sad. I'll tell you right now, 2 hours a week, there are going to be certain weeks that you would kill for an extra 2 hours a week. So if you can automate things, if you can just have things taken care of for you. Some people love Instacart. Some people love automating their bill process. Whatever it is, buy you time, that's another investment that I think is going to be worthwhile, especially the deeper you get into your program.
That's good. That's good.
Yeah. Go ahead. Sorry.
No, go ahead. I was just saying I love that you mentioned that as an investment as well because, like you said, you love to garden and you love to do that, but the value and what it gave you back was time, and that's something that we can't really put a price on anyway. So it's definitely
And it's time and it's stress management because eventually the thing that you love is one more thing that needs to be taken care of. And if you don't have the time, then it becomes a negative stressor. And you're not going to need that when you're working on your dissertation. You're not going to need that as you prep for comps. You're just not going to need it. So getting ahead of the curve and handling it before it becomes drama, it just makes life easier.
Oh, yeah.
So
now, what was the third thing you were going to mention?
I was going to say, I'm looking right now at my desk, and, you know, my desk, I got a little greenery around me. I got an essential oil diffuser around me. If I'm going to say buy something that helps, then I'm going to say, you know what, make that third thing personal space enhancement. You know,
okay.
We're all going to have to find a little corner of the world to hide in during all of this, whether it's your dining room table, whether you got mm-hmm. a work room, whatever it is, whatever space you're going to be in, make sure that space is good for you. Make sure there's a soft lamp that doesn't hurt, because you know what? We all are going to live and die under fluorescent lights if we don't change it. You know, get the essential oil diffuser, because it makes a difference. It just does, to have peppermint or lemongrass or eucalyptus kind of going through the area, or lavender. Have some green plants around, because it changes the environment. It makes things just not as sterile. And so I'd recommend that. You know, I got pictures of my kids on the wall in front of me. I got pictures of family all around. Invest in your space, because then when you go to that space, it won't feel like you're being punished and being sent to the corner.
Right. That's good. And I like what you said. It's creating that environment to, you know, to be successful, like you said, and not to feel like it's a punishment, because it's not. And, of course, it's all worth it in the end. So this next question, I know that you're proficient at this, of course, now, but during that process, how do they manage? It's really a time management question, but how can doctoral students, how can they manage their academic responsibilities with family if they have children? How do they manage to keep all that going and not drop all of those things that they have to manage?
You know, that's probably one of the biggest challenges that all doctoral students have. Just, you know, how do I keep juggling all the balls and keeping them all up in the air without, you know, dropping something? And the answer tends to be, for a lot of people, you know, rather than being forced to drop something because you get overwhelmed, mm-hmm. why don't you choose which ones you can put down? Why don't you choose which ones you can put down, even if only temporarily? You know, so I always recommend, once you get into the program and you're psyched, you want to tell everyone, and that's great. And you want to do the up-down jump and get the pat on the back, and that's awesome. That's important. But what's also important is sharing with people how important it is to you and how hard it'll be and what your end goals are, because not only does that make you accountable to them, it also lays the groundwork for both sides of that equation for when you have to say no to certain things, when you have to step back from certain responsibilities and obligations. You know, it's going to be hard. It really is. And it's not uncommon for doctoral students to have a sense of loss, you know, especially in that first year of the program when you're making adjustments because you're not going out every weekend the way you used to. You're not seeing people at certain times the way you used to. You maybe missed a birthday party even, or whatever the case is. But you have to remember that these things are temporary. You're making this sacrifice temporary so that you can permanently have those letters behind your name when this is all said and done. So I think letting people know that, yeah, it's going to be a challenge, so that they can help you rather than make you feel bad about it. And just trying to be ready for the fact that it's going to be hard. You are going to have to step back from a few things temporarily. Get off the committee. Don't coach your kid's little league team the way I had to step back for a season or two. You know, things like that you want to. But look, you're shifting temporarily.
I like that. I like that you mentioned that it's temporary, because it's not forever. You know, the program, you're going to graduate one day and hopefully on time. But it's definitely temporary. So I know, and you kind of touched on this a little bit a few minutes ago, but of course each program is different, you know, from discipline to discipline and so forth and so on. But what are just, if you can give us a general sense, what are some type of support services that doctoral students can maybe look forward to or maybe even inquire about at their particular college or university?
Well, you know, there's a huge range of services growing at different schools, and so it's really interesting to see how schools are choosing to support their students, because this is a relatively new phenomenon. I mean, up until 50 years ago, give or take, at a lot of schools, it was like, look, if you can't cut it, that's on you. And the school very much saw student completion and student success as a student responsibility. It's in recent years that the mindset has changed around completion rates and student success, where schools are like, you know what, we have a hand in this too. So it's definitely important for any potential doctoral student to learn what's available at the school you're considering. For example, just about every school now has a writing center, but more and more schools are creating branches that are specific for grad students or doctoral students. And that's because their needs are different and they're engaged with the campus differently. You know, an undergrad may live on campus, and so they've got options to be there 7 days a week. For most, you know, master's and doctoral students, you're there just for class. You know, you're a commuter student. That changes everything. A lot of schools are starting to offer additional counseling to help with, like, stress management and anxiety, especially because they know that grad school, especially when you're balancing all these other aspects of life, it really does cause a lot of stress and really push a lot of people, you know, to the brink. So it's important for that support to be there. And like I said, more schools are offering that. More schools are helping with the transition phase, knowing that getting back into school, especially for master's and doctorate programs, knowing that coming back to school, you could have a lot of people who have not been in a school environment for like literally a decade. So the readjustment can be difficult. So a lot of schools are doing these ambassador and mentor programs to help with new students getting back into the fold. For example, I've been working with USC for the last 2 years since I graduated to help serve as a mentor for new students. And so the core of what I do is I check in on my mentees to make sure, you know, how are you adjusting with the time demands? How are you adjusting the stress and, you know, whatever you're facing individually, whether it's, you know, high demand work, family situation, whatever it is. And officially, I'm only assigned to help out for the first term of the program. So I get a one or two new students every academic term. But I mean, honestly, I still touch base with the people I met a year and a half ago in that first cohort, because you connect. There now becomes a new bridge, and that's a good resource on both ends. So it's definitely good for any potential student, doctoral student, to ask and do some of that research regarding what's available, because if nothing else, it'll give you a sneak peek into how the school views its role in student success.
That's good, and I wanted to throw this in there too for those that are listening. One, this is why I love your company, what you're doing. And by the way, I found you on Instagram, and I've been following you for a while, actually, so I love the resources you share. But I'm so glad that you exist, because we know that there is a gap. And, you know, I talk to doctoral or future doctoral students a lot, and this is what they say: well, my school doesn't have this, or I need this support. So I'm so glad that we have services like yours where they can come to you who's gone through the process successfully. You finished school. And you can give them that perspective, you know, and help them through it.
I appreciate that.
Absolutely. So I'm asking you this. So now, thinking back on your years through your PhD, through your doctorate degree, what were some things maybe that were unexpected that you think somebody going through this process now should be aware of?
Ooh. I think, like I said before, one is going to be that no matter how ready you think you are to say no and to step back, it's going to be hard, and you're going to feel bad about it. I think you'll be surprised to see that a few people will fade away during the course of your program, and they may not come back when you're done. And that's not a good or a bad. It just kind of is, you know, people in different chapters of life at different times, but that happens. And, you know, that too has an emotional response. I think it's important for doctoral students to remember, and I tell them, I say, you know, whatever you're going through, there's a safe bet that there's at least 100 other people who have hit that same wall and made it through. So have faith that you'll be okay, because sometimes that stress, that fear is really overwhelming. And it helps sometimes to realize others have gone through it, others can sympathize, and others have made it. So if they can do it, why can't you?
That's good.
You know, and there's going to be easy parts for some people. There's going to be hard parts for everyone. The biggest thing is just don't use any of that to put into your head that you don't belong. You know, the comparisons, the negative talk, that's such an easy trap to fall into. And don't, because the bottom line is every class you take, every book you read, it's going to click for some people overnight. And for others, they're going to struggle through the whole class. It doesn't say anything about your intelligence or whether or not you belong. I mean, again, that's just one that's so common, that imposter syndrome. A doctorate, people forget, a doctorate's not about measuring your intelligence. It's not. It's really a lot more about your perseverance, your resiliency, than it is on what score you can get on a test on day one. If it was about intelligence, they'd give the degrees after you took an entrance exam on day one and you'd be done with it. It's not, though. Sure. It's a process. It's a journey. It's about seeing who's going to push through, because the drive is there and the potential is there. So that's hard. Those are all different things that come at you from different directions, you know, and sometimes more than one will hit you at one time. But yeah, I mean, it's a journey. So.
Absolutely. And I think it goes back to what you were just saying a moment ago. It's about leaning on that support and reaching out and asking your university, hey, you know, maybe like they have a mentoring program like the one you're a part of, and just reaching out to talk to somebody who's gone through it.
Totally.
So, now, I say this one because this next question is probably the most common question I get, but it's down to the finances. So the question, sometimes it ranges from just throughout the process. I think it goes back to really when you were first talking about doing your homework. Some people don't estimate the cost of just applying, so there's that phase of finances that they need. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, there's tuition, and then there's, you know, textbooks. There's all these other things. So how can doctoral students, how can they manage their finances throughout their program?
Ooh, there's a question and a half. You know, I agree with you. It goes straight back to homework. A lot of it, not all of it, but a lot of it goes back to homework, because you really got to think about these things before you get into the application process. And I don't think anyone should ever choose not to apply to a program. And I would make these recommendations back when I was teaching high school students. Mm-hmm. Like, don't choose not to go to college because you think you can't afford it. I'm not saying that they should be aware of the financial obligations and let that become a barrier. But be aware of what you've got coming down the pike, because that will be important. Like you said, everything from the application fees to maybe test fees to if you have fees. I mean, there are people who get sideswiped because they don't realize that they have to reach way back to their undergrad days and pay for transcripts. And that adds up real fast. Like, the little things, the nickels and dimes add up. But mm-hmm. even on a larger scale, I mean, when it comes to tuition, that's the big one we look at, right? And there are mm-hmm. so many possibilities that people leave untapped. I mean, see if your employer will assist with your tuition costs. A lot of places will assist with tuition because they see it as professional development. See if the school offers grants or scholarships, either in your department or tied to your potential research topic. Look into being a teaching assistant if you can. A lot of people don't even realize that that's a separate application. You know, they don't go digging for it, but that's financial assistance that would help a lot of people. The one that I always think is interesting is, and I always recommend for people who live near the school that they're going to attend, you know, if they're not doing it online, if they're not doing a hybrid, see if the university has any employment opportunities, any openings that would be a good fit for you. Because most schools give tuition discounts to employees. And it may be worth a few years of flat or lower income if it means less debt for tuition. I mean, that's a huge one. I remember having a friend who went to school with me at USC, and he was like double blessed because his spouse worked at the university, so they got a certain amount discounted, and then his employer covered a certain amount of tuition, so in the end, he got his doctorate for free.
Nice.
Yeah, because he was mixing and matching the different resources that were available. And so I think a lot of people just end up leaving a lot of money and a lot of potential on the table. I mean, you have to remember, too, even if you end up going straight loans, so many loan programs have forgiveness available. So it's important to dig into that as its own separate project as you get ready for school. A lot of people think it's just like a branch of going to school. No, this is a whole separate project that you need to dig into and be ready for. Because it's a little like buying a house, you know, that if you know how much power you can pull from different directions and you know how far you can spread, then you're better equipped to make better, to make quick and informed decisions when the time comes. I mean, even if you end up putting 100% of it on loans, you may end up with like 3 part-time tutoring jobs. I mean, who knows? You could be anywhere in between. But the point being that when the time comes, you can make the best call for you in your situation, but only if you know what's available.
Right. Now, can you speak to 2 other things? Managing living expenses, especially if you're not working, and also graduation expenses. I don't think people realize that there is fees associated with graduating.
There's a lot of things associated with graduating.
And all that stuff.
First, the living expenses piece. For a lot of people, it's very doable, but it's like a muscle that it's a muscle you have, but you don't flex very often. I mean, it's all about coming back to a budget, right? And if you're a list maker and if you're a linear thinker, then you're probably already operating on a budget, and it's just a matter of modifying the budget to make sure you're living within your means. But a lot of people have that muscle. They've just not had to use it up until now. This is what a lot of people, a lot of us forget, that you've been really successful up to this point in life. That's how you got here. You got to the doorstep of this great potential situation. But the practices and the lifestyle and the choices that got you here will not necessarily get you to the end. And so things that you did and ways that you lived and practices that you had to get through even your master's won't necessarily translate well in your doctoral program. So if you never had to worry about money and you could be a little bit loosey-goosey on the budget, you know, up until now, especially now as you go into your doctoral program, I'd recommend tightening your belt. If only because, like you said, the books, the university fees. There are certain things we already know about. You know that there's random university fees. You know that there's a certain amount that's going to go to textbooks. But like you said, on the back end, the regalia, the any sorts of fees for getting your dissertation checked out. I have friends who spent anywhere from $200 to $1,000 on editors for their dissertation when it got to that point at the end. I mean, there are just a lot of nickels and dimes that add up. I mean, the books alone will add up. We all know that. But depending on your course, depending on your discipline, whether, you know, we used to all cringe back in undergrad because you had to buy the new math book every year. There was no such thing as a hand-me-down math book, right? In English class, you could probably find a paperback from 10 years ago. And you'd be like, sweet, I got it on Amazon. But certain disciplines, you got to stay current. You're going to be paying top dollar for whatever the newest publication is. That adds up fast, and more so if they know that the book is used for this level of education. So it doesn't hurt to tighten the belt, again, before you need it, because there will be a lot of fees along the way that just sneak up, and a lot of expenses that are school-related. So I definitely recommend to any new student, get your house in order, get the checkbook in order, if people still use checkbooks. Get your budget on Excel and get your formulas squared up so that you know exactly how much is coming in, how much is going out. And the whole point is you don't want it to be a wash. You need to be able to save a little bit, because now textbooks is going to be a regular expense. School fees will be a regular expense. This is not going to be, you know, a one-off. The one that tends to surprise people a lot is gas money. If you're commuting to class back and forth, you know, one day, 2 days a week, if you've got to get to campus and you don't think about the added mileage, gas money jumps, especially in certain parts of the country. Gas money will rip through your budget real fast. So think of it as making an operational budget. And you need to include every little detail just to make sure that you're ready for it.
That's good, because one of the worst things is, you know, you're chugging along and covering things, and then there's this, you know, surprise that comes. And, you know, it only takes one or two surprises that could knock somebody off of their financial stability, you know.
You know, and I used to always explain to people, you know, we all hear that phrase, you know, running a mile a minute. And I tell people, the real danger with running a mile a minute is you got to remember something. Even if you never skateboarded as a kid, right? The danger is the more speed you pick up, and think about skateboarding as a kid, the more speed you pick up, whether on a downhill or just kind of ramping it up, faster you're going, the more effect a little pebble in the road has in throwing you off. You know, if you're going breakneck speed down a hill and you hit this little pebble, you go flying through the air because it hit your wheel just right, threw off your momentum, threw off your balance, threw off everything, and you got launched and you got hurt. Now, if you're going a more moderate speed, if you're in more control, okay, you're still going to hit that pebble, but the effects will not be so drastic. So what's the danger of running a mile a minute? Well, that's pretty fast, and if you're going that fast, it probably won't take very much to throw you off balance. So slow down. Take your time. That way you don't get surprised, you don't get launched, and you don't get hurt.
Absolutely. And so, Juan, if you can kind of share, for those that are listening, they're like, okay, I definitely need to work with somebody because this is a lot for me. Can you kind of share, you know, some things that your company offers? How can people get in contact with you? Do you work with all doctoral students? Is there kind of a cutoff with disciplines? Just kind of share those kind of things with us.
No, absolutely. We work with students from all different disciplines, all across the U.S. and actually internationally, because really a lot of the struggles that one doctoral student has, a lot of them have. You know, whether, you think academic and you think writing, helping with research and organizing, but really the biggest stresses that a lot of us go through are, like we've been talking about, time management and communication and structure and setting yourself up for success. So anyone who's interested in working with us as a coach can go to doctoralsupport.org. And if you get to doctoralsupport.org, you'll see on that homepage there's links for coaching and coaching services. There's links for editing and editing services. There's even a link for the book that reflects all of the dissertation research that I put together in my own studies. And they can definitely follow us on Facebook or Instagram to get a feel for what we do. But by and large, the bottom line is when you sit with one of our coaches, and for lots of people, they sit with me. The first meeting is essentially a consultation to get the lay of the land. Who are you? What are you going through? What are you stressed about? Because if you reached out, you're worried. So I want to know what you're worried about so we can get you through that. And then it's just ongoing. For some people, it's weekly, biweekly, monthly, just to check in. We don't replace your dissertation or your academic advisor, but we recognize that sometimes you just need more help than is available through the school or through your assigned advisor. So for those people, we're a little extra support. I mean, that's why we're the doctoral support team. We're here to hold you up, get you across that finish line, because a lot of people interpret, oh, this is hard, means I'm not good enough. And that's not true. It just means it's hard, and it would be hard for anyone. So we're here to help everyone get through those ups and downs.
That's awesome. And I let everybody know, for those that are listening, I am going to have all of the doctoral support information, the website, social media. So if you go through the show notes, you're welcome to click through those. That will be on there. But one, I have enjoyed this conversation. I've been taking notes myself. You've given a lot of great information. Do you have any final words of advice?
You know, I always just tell people, breathe. Breathe and trust the process, because like we said, it's a journey, and you're not going to see around every curve. You're not going to always know what's coming. Just breathe and reach out for help before you need it. And I mean, there's no shame in this game. This is new for all of us. All of these, you know, qualitative and quantitative, and coming up with avoiding a double barrel question. Oh my God, what's a double barrel question? All of these things, these are new terms, new phrases for all of us. If you look around the room and everyone's nodding and you're like, how come I'm not nodding? How come I don't get it? You know what? They're all faking it. It's okay. Just breathe, trust the process, and reach out for help, and you'll get through just like the rest of us have.
That's good. That's good. And again, thank you so much for sharing your words of wisdom with us today.
No worries, Ashley. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome.
I want to thank you for tuning in to today's podcast episode. To learn more about how you can use your talents and achievements to find and win scholarships in less time, visit my website, which is www.collegeprepready.com. Also, follow me on Facebook at Prep4College. That's Prep4College. Now take care, and I look forward to bringing you more scholarship search tools, tips, and strategies in our next podcast episode. Goodbye.